We'll go ahead and get started with our 10:30 session. This is our first education session in IMX 2019, and welcome to all of you. My name is John Schulberg. I'm the editor of the Waterways Journal, and my job here is to introduce our moderator, Mary Lamy. Mary is the executive director of the St. Louis Regional Freightway, where she is responsible for developing public-private partnerships in the eight-county St. Louis region to optimize the region's freight transportation network. So without further ado, I'll pass it along to Mary.
Good morning. How is everybody today? All righty. Well, for those of you who are not from the St. Louis region, welcome. We are so excited that you have made and invested your time to come in and be part of today's and tomorrow and yesterday's events. Today, we're going to have a panel discussion on government partners. The topic is growth and reliability of our inland waterways. You can see we have four panelists. They've got some really fantastic things to talk about, and more importantly for all of you, they've basically consolidated a 30 to 40 minute presentation into about seven. So they're going to hit the highlights of some really exciting things. So I think this is going to be one of the best sessions you're going to have over the next 2 days. So first thing we need to say is our panelists include industry leaders who are working at both a local and national level. And they're working obviously with each other to strengthen and modernize our nation's locks and dams and our ports. We're going to start with the Maritime Administration with their America's Marine Highway and Port Infrastructure Development Programs that provide expertise on inland initiatives, including port financing and port infrastructure. For those of you who are from the area, we have several developing ports in Cairo, Illinois, Jefferson County, Missouri, and Jefferson City, Missouri. So I think his comments will be of interest. We're then going to shift to the Waterways Council for their support efforts for the WERDA bill, support for higher infrastructure funding, advocacy for increasing operations and maintenance for the waterway system. And then from a local perspective, we'll hear from America Central Port, located in Granite City, Illinois, which is about 7 miles north of us. And this is a success story of a port that has worked closely with USDOT, MARAD, IDOT, and private industry to develop a 1,200-acre former military base that has helped increase jobs and opportunities for carriers and terminals. Then we're going to wrap it up, and we're going to hear from the Coast Guard with their role in vessel safety and protecting commerce and the nation's supply chain. So for our panelists, we actually have about 7 minutes for each of you. Evan Glantz from my staff is planted in the audience. He is going to be waving a flag or making some movement that gives you an idea that you are at your 7 minutes. And at that point, you're going to get the symbol that you need to park it, because we want to make sure that we've got extra time for Q&A. So for our first panelist, we have Chad Dorsey. He's the director of the Inland Waterways Gateway Office. He is located in Paducah, Kentucky. Prior to his current role, he served many roles within the private maritime sector and the recipient of several awards. As a navigation officer, he spent 8 years in the Merchant Marine, visiting over 25 foreign ports of call and delivering food aid through which is currently known as the Food for Peace program. He then transitioned to a shoreside career to serve as the director of operations in one of the nation's largest dry bulk terminals. Please welcome Chad.
Thank you, Mary. 7 minute challenge. Okay, here we go. It's an honor to participate today with this distinguished panel. Good morning, IMX. My name is Chad Dorsey, as Mary said, and I'm the Gateway Director for the Inland Waterways Gateway for the Maritime Administration. Today I have three goals. First, to give a brief overview of the Maritime Administration. Second, to highlight MARAD programming for infrastructure development on the inland marine transportation system. And third, to ensure that everyone leaves here today knowing that MARAD Gateway directors are available for support and education. Maritime Administration is a modal department located within the Department of Transportation as part of the federal government. Our leadership consists of the Secretary of Transportation, Elaine L. Chao, our Maritime Administrator, Mark H. Busby, and our Deputy Administrator, Richard Balzano. And I promise this is the only slide I'm going to read, but the mission of MARAD is to foster and promote the U.S. Merchant Marine and the American maritime industry to strengthen the maritime transportation system, which includes landside infrastructure, shipbuilding and repair, and labor to meet the economic and security needs of our nation. MARAD was established in 1950 by the recommendation of President Roosevelt. MARAD contains more than 800 employees located between our D.C. headquarters, the United States Merchant Marine Academy in Kings Point, New York, and various locations at fleet sites, as well as our gateway offices. MARAD has 10 gateway offices serving as the public's direct link, providing education and support of programs to the public. The inland waterways were served through the St. Louis Gateway solely until last year, when the area of responsibility was expanded to 23 states. The second Inland Waterways Gateway office was developed and located in Paducah, Kentucky, and my office is responsible for 9 states, including Arkansas, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Alabama, Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania. A large territory, but we're able to reach out to our stakeholders and cover those areas. So briefly, to go over the ports and waterways area within MARAD, there's 5 key areas: port infrastructure development, ports and waterways planning, deep water licensing ports and conveyance, performance and program compliance, and maritime and intermodal outreach. The port infrastructure development side does project management and grant management. Ports and waterways planning is where they contain all of the programming, such as the Marine Highway Program, as well as port infrastructure development grant programs. Deep water licensing and ports contains the port conveyance program, which would be applicable to the inland industry. And as we go through the presentation, I'll have slides on each of these. Performance and program compliance is a new area to ensure that we have grant compliance in all that we do. And of course, the maritime and intermodal outreach is our gateways available to the public. So our key inland marine highway program, America's Marine Highway. Excuse me, sorry about that. Was established in 2010 in response to industry demand for designated channels equipped to service domestic freight. The program supports integration of reliable, regularly scheduled, competitive, and sustainable marine highway services into the surface transportation system. There are eligibility requirements and suggested elements necessary to create a marine highway service. It must be on a designated marine highway route. Typically, projects consist of public-private partnerships that may contain ports, operators, state or local agencies, MPOs, economic development agencies, and shippers. A project designation must be completed and approved by the Secretary of Transportation before funding can begin. This is to ensure that there is an operational plan, capital, and demonstration of financial availability and public benefits to move projects forward. This slide depicts our existing sponsors and grant recipients within the America's Marine Highway Program since its origination. As you can see, MARAD is committed to aiding in infrastructure development on America's Marine Highway routes, and as well as our inland waterways. One of our key people here for project development and project designation is Martin Parker. Martin, will you please stand or wave, one or the other? So as we move forward, if there are questions on the Marine Highway Program, Martin will certainly be glad to assist. And again, our gateway directors are always here for any questions. I have a couple more slides quickly. The Port Infrastructure Development Program consists of many parts, but it was formerly known as the Strong Ports Program. Gateway directors conduct port talks with ports, inland ports, to aid in information sharing and gathering that can create guidance as to which programs may best benefit the organizations. There are also cooperative agreement studies and joint programs that aid in understanding the industry and offer potential key information to make more intelligent decision-making. The Port Conveyance Program is where MARAD can assist with federal real estate properties that are no longer needed by the federal government. These opportunities are for the purpose of redevelopment to build and establish port-related operations or services. I'm going to skip this one in the interest of time. The Build America Bureau is our gateway to the loan programs. So far, what I've spoken today has been the grant programs. The Build America Bureau has two main programs, although there are others. One is TIFIA, the Transportation Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act, and the other is RIF, which is the Railroad Rehabilitation and Improvement Financing. These are low-interest, I'm getting the wave here, low-interest loans for projects, and they can be work through our contact at the bottom. The contact for MARAD for the Build America Bureau is Kirk Clausen. I apologize for running through that so quickly, but I appreciate the time. I do want to just say that given the short amount of time, our gateway directors are here to support, and we look forward to hearing from you, anyone who has interest in MARAD programming. Thank you.
Excellent job, Chad. So two takeaways from Chad's presentation. First thing is, if you are a developing port and if you're interested in getting information about grants for infrastructure or equipment, Chad's the person to talk to you. From a private industry perspective, embedded in his presentation, these grants are also available for private sector, for shippers and carriers, and typically that's a partnership where you get someone from the public agency to help sponsor that. So as Chad mentioned, he walked through his slides very quickly, lots of really good information. But again, the takeaway on that, there are grant funds available, and those grant funds are allowing the industry from a shipping perspective to be able to have more competitive transportation rates. Next on our list is Tracy Z. Tracy is representing Mike Tuohy, who has an illness with his family and unfortunately was unable to be with us. Tracy is the Vice President of Government Relations. He's with the Waterways Council. Tracy advocates for Waterway Council goals for authorizations and appropriations which support a modern, efficient, and reliable inland waterway transportation system. He also works to enhance the Council's stakeholder relationship with the Corps of Engineers while additionally tracking legislation to ensure that the Waterways Council views are reflected in the outcomes. Please welcome Tracy.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Like she said, my name is Tracy Z with Waterways Council. I'm going to give you guys a little quick snapshot on what's going on in Congress and the federal government. Before we get there, just want to give you guys an update on what moved our latest numbers. Corps of Engineers are going to get us the 2018 numbers here in about 2 or 3 months, so these are still 2017 numbers. 578.1 million tons valued at $222 million moved on the fuel tax portion of the inland waterway transportation system. Something I like to point out on this pie chart is the upper left-hand corner, petroleum has taken over for coal as the largest commodity moved on the river at 22%. A good example of this is if you look at Nashville, they used to receive less than 1% of all petroleum products via barge, and this last year they received about 25% of petroleum products via barge because their pipelines are at capacity. So something at Waterways Council, we work very closely with the Army Corps of Engineers, who's actually maintain our locks and dams. We have a motto at Waterways Council, rising tide lifts all ships. So we don't advocate just for inland waterway money. We advocate for Corps of Engineer budget to be increased overall. If you look at the blue line at the bottom, that's the administration. Doesn't matter, Republican, Democrat. It always hovers about $5 billion. So at Waterways Council, we rely a lot on Congress to plus up the Corps of Engineers budget. We received record-level funding in 2019 of about $6.99, and currently right now in the Energy and Water House bill is being marked up. They had another record level funding of about $7.36 billion. That should be final about noon today. So, you know, Inland Waterway Trust Fund, that's the actual mechanism that builds and modernizes our locks and dams right now. This is the 29-cent fuel that was raised in 2014 by 45%. We've had a very good last 6 years, hovering about $400 million. Administration, again, continues not to give us full use of our trust fund, so we rely on Congress to go back each year. So what does this higher number for the trust fund means? We used to only have Olmsted under construction since about 2012. Well, this last year we had Olmsted become operational. Lower Mon will be funded to completion this year in this budget, in this fiscal year. We funded major rehabilitation in LaGrange Lock and Dam, or Lock, and we sped up the completion of Kentucky and Chick Lock now to about 2023. So significant progress has been made since we've increased our fuel tax and received a cost share change on Olmsted Lock and Dam. Our locks aren't getting any younger. Modernization can't happen fast enough. So we rely on maintaining our locks and dams. So we look at the core line item of operation maintenance. The last 6 years, Congress has been very successful increasing the O&M for the Corps of Engineers up to a record level funding of about $3.74 billion. Why is that important? Well, here's what our lock portfolio will look like in 2020. We only have one lock under the age of 10 years old. That's Olmsted, obviously. That was just dedicated. We got 69 locks that are going to be above 80-plus years. Average age of your lock and dam is 60 years old right now, which is concerning because lock and dam is only made to last 50 years. After that, the risk of failure increases exponentially. So what has the increase in O&M money meant for the Corps of Engineers? So the blue line is unscheduled delays or closures of locks, and the red line is scheduled closure. So what is a scheduled closure? Anything that was planned in advance in a work plan of a Corps of Engineers. So the good news is the blue line has decreased significantly, meaning less unscheduled closures, meaning that our shippers can plan around scheduled closures for efficient transportation. So what's coming up? Infrastructure, you know, it's been the sexy word for about 3 years. They're having a meeting this week, Trump and the Democrats, to come up with how they're going to pay for this $2 trillion package. Well, if a $2 trillion package does come, WCI has identified more than 15 projects valued at about $8 billion. Our deal plan with them just to cut us a check and we could just go out and construct these all right now. Recognizing that probably won't happen, our number one priority is recommending a cost share change to the way that the locks are built. Right now it's 50% Inland Waterway Trust Fund, 50% General Treasury. We would like to see that change to 75% General Treasury, 25% Inland Waterway Trust Fund. If this happens, we'd be able to complete our portfolio in about 20 years. I'll get into more details into that later. Our other idea that we're still socializing, it takes a long time to socialize things in Congress, is Corps of Engineers locks or dams generate about $5 billion a year in hydropower revenues. Of that $5 billion, $1.5 billion goes back to the General Treasury and sits in the miscellaneous receipts account. If we capture 10% of that $1.5 billion, it would allow us to stay at a $400 million level in the Inland Waterway Trust Fund, which would allow us to complete our portfolio of projects in about 20 years. So conforming the construction cost share, like if we stay at a 50-50 rate in 10 years, you're looking at about only six of our, you know, 15 to 25 projects that we've identified completed. In 20 years, you got 13. You got 12 projects sitting there waiting to be completed or funded to completion. If you conform it to 75-25, in 10 years, you're going to have 13 projects. And in 20 years, you're going to have all 25 projects funded to completion. You know, a lot of people, why is the $400 million level important? Well, the last 6 years, we've been operating about a 70-30 split, if you look at the cost share different. So we're not asking for new additional money. We're asking to stay at the same level that we have been about the last 6 years. With that, any questions? Hopefully I stayed in the 7 minutes.
Who is in the... This is right.
All righty. Thank you, Tracy. And we appreciate all the work that the Waterways Council does for advocating for infrastructure funding along the inland waterway system. Our next presenter is Ben McCall. He is the Deputy Director with America Central Port. His primary responsibilities include planning improvements to the Port District's 1,200-acre property, overseeing port real estate development projects, and securing financing for these improvements. Since 2001, this former military base has developed to an industrial park and business campus that has grown from 12 tenants in 2001 to over 75 tenants. Please welcome Ben.
Thank you, Mary. I want to talk a little bit about the ways in which local government partners like port authorities can also be government partners, and primarily in two ways. One is that as a local unit of government, we partner with federal and state agencies in order to invest in infrastructure. And the other way is that we partner with private industry in order to create facilities that are useful for the production of jobs and business. You can see a picture of the Port Authority's primary property here on the screen right next to Lock 27 on the Chain of Rocks Canal and the new Madison Harbor in the foreground. We're located just a few minutes north of us across the river in Granite City, Illinois. And we're a special purpose unit of local government. Many states have these sorts of port authorities, port districts. In the state of Illinois, there are 19 different port districts. And we have a mission mandated in our legislature to try and promote the creation of intermodal transportation facilities and infrastructure, and to do that in a way that facilitates business expansion and job creation. We have about a 200-square-mile territory, but the primary way that we operationalize that mission is through the development of the property that we own and lease today. And that's on this 1,200-acre industrial site. We have two Mississippi River harbors. They're shown on the map, over 30 miles of rail infrastructure and 2 million square feet of warehouse under roof today. The majority of that property, about two-thirds of which were highlighted in the MARAD presentation through the conveyance program that was formerly the Granite City U.S. Army Base or Charles Melvin Price Support Center, which closed in the early 2000s at a loss of about 400 to 500 local jobs. The port was selected after submitting its redevelopment plan for the property as the redevelopment authority, essentially, for that property, and has since been redeveloping that into an industrial park to recoup those job losses for the local community. And see here a picture of our Granite City Harbor facilities that many of you are going to be familiar with, as well as the Madison Harbor that was recently completed in 2016. Our business model we refer to as for-profit government, which essentially means we don't receive any tax revenues, and so all of our income is generated through throughput fees on rail and barge, as well as commercial and residential leases. We then, in turn, take the profit that we generate and invest that back into infrastructure in such a way that manufacturers and logistics companies, shippers, et cetera, can benefit directly from the facility that we provide. So I'm going to run through quickly just the incredible cost of that local infrastructure required to get product to the river, particularly in a 1950s era Army base. I'm sure many of you are aware of the age of the infrastructure that you're dealing with. It's the same for us. With over $5 million invested in roadway infrastructure over the past 10 years, nearly $20 million in rail infrastructure, and the largest amount of funds in harbor reinvestment. We're able to take advantage of another one of the programs that Maritime Administration discussed, which was a grant program. This one, the former Tiger grant program, in order to construct the Madison Harbor in terminal several years ago. We also have real estate assets which are continually reinvested to the tune of $20 million over the past 15 years, including the construction of new facilities given our current occupancy in the existing space. So where are we going in the future? We continue to take the profits from our business operations, so to speak, and turn that into new development. So we are working to expand our industrial park with an additional up to 1 million square feet, primarily of rail-served warehouse space. This is a niche market for us and many of the customers that we have, primarily in manufacturing, who tend to have a greater number of good-paying jobs for the local community. These are served by Terminal Railroad Association of St. Louis. To date, we've completed the 126,000 square foot facility in the upper left-hand corner with additional acreage to come. We have a number of projects coming up in 2018 that are kind of that illustrate the types of development projects that we work on to try and facilitate business expansion. And one of them is the redevelopment of this former Army Base steam plant, which we received from the Army Reserve just about 2 years ago. The base closure happened in 2000, 2001. Sometimes the federal government takes a little bit of while to get those assets back to us, and so the state of those facilities, unfortunately, will take a lot of reinvestment to bring up to par. We have an optical coating manufacturer who will be occupying this building, hopefully, by the end of the year. And we'll also be working on the redevelopment of a locomotive repair shop, 40-foot clear heights, 15-ton and 25-ton cranes inside this facility, but the shell is just completely torn apart, as you can see. So we'll be working to refit this building and working with our local communities to attract manufacturing companies to utilize this space. We're happy with the success rate that we've had, which has recouped the job losses from the base closure some 15-plus years ago, with now over 920 employees on the property and $300 million of investment from private companies on the facility. My contact information is there, and we'd love to talk to any of you about how we can partner on projects here locally or share the experiences that we've had to help you on projects that you may have in the future. Thanks.
Excellent job, Ben. I want to make a comment regarding America Central Port with Ben and his boss, Dennis Wilsmeyer. For the St. Louis region, we have four public ports, and I think what is really unique is the regionalism that these four public ports work together. Typically, you would think they are in competition, but as Ben said, they're actually working very closely together. America Central Port has received several different Tiger grants with some of the infrastructure that they have in place, and again, they're a leader with that. They're sharing that information, and I mentioned with some of the developing ports, none of us hesitate in directing them to Ben and Dennis to learn more about what their success has been. So excellent job, Ben, and we appreciate that. Next, our final panelist is Captain Scott Stormer. He is the sector commander, Upper Mississippi River, with the U.S. Coast Guard. He is responsible for Coast Guard operations that includes all or parts of the 11 states and over 2,200 miles of commercially navigable waterways on the Upper Mississippi, Missouri, and Illinois rivers and their tributaries. As the operational commander, he leads 280 active duty reserve and civilian personnel and over 1,100 auxiliary members, five river tenders, and three marine safety detachments. These men and women promote safety, security, and environmental protection while facilitating more than $41 billion in commerce supported by the Inland River System. Please welcome Captain Scott Stormer.
Thank you, Mary. Good morning. It's always a special pleasure for me to participate alongside our industry and government partners at any venue, especially here at the Inland Marine Expo. And I'd like to thank each of you for your continued strong partnership and support of the Coast Guard's 8th District our men and women here at Sector Upper Mississippi River, as well as the other sectors within the D8 team. Much of what we've been talking about this morning has been on full display this spring during the longest period of high water on record, specifically the partnership for governance that's critical to the marine transportation system, of which the inland environment is such a key component.
American waterways keep commerce flowing. They keep Americans fed and employed. Tonight's dinner was shipped, and tomorrow's fuel is already on board. 90% of goods Americans make and use travel by ship. Fuel, cars, produce. Waterways keep America prosperous. $12.6 billion in commerce ship on American waterways daily. That number will double in less than 10 years. Your U.S. Coast Guard has a plan for that increase by improving the maritime transportation system, helping trade and travel by sea, modernizing systems, and investing in the 23 million Americans who keep the waterways running. Our waterways and infrastructure are aging, and we need every American, all our communities, to join us in building this future. It's critical to our nation's success, so a family farm can sell its produce, so our homes are heated, so America can be open for business.
So this morning I'd like to go beyond the challenges of the moment and talk for a second about those that we face together for the future and how the Coast Guard is preparing to meet those challenges in the present. As you well know better than I, there is no doubt that what you do as a maritime industry is vital to our security, our economy, and our environment. The Maritime Transportation System, or the MTS, is the lifeblood of our economy, is truly a source of national power and security, and is the most environmentally sound means to transportation to meet the needs of our nation. As you look around the inland system, and even this expo, the future becomes apparent. Literally trillions of dollars of commerce flow through our rivers and ports each year, billions of dollars in private sector infrastructure investment, manufacturing facilities, container on barge routes, oil and gas facilities, and enhanced passenger vessels and terminals. At the same time, we're faced with a strategic triple challenge of growing the capacity of the MTS to meet this increased and increasing demand, while simultaneously reducing environmental impact and dealing with the ever-increasing complexity that enables the growth of the system. And I argue that only shared governance will meet those needs. We know that an enduring role of the Coast Guard will be to understand the strategic environment in which you operate, to anticipate transformative changes needed in technology, operations, and governance, and to lead in the safety, security, and environmental stewardship of the MTS. That is why we've recently signed and published the Coast Guard's Maritime Commerce Strategic Outlook. The outlook is intended to be a careful consideration of the strategic environment in which we will operate with you over the next decade. It's intended to help us identify those actions and initiatives that we as the Coast Guard, working alongside you and all of the other MTS stakeholders, must take today in order to remain ready, responsive, and relevant for the future. This document, the MCSO, outlines three lines of effort: facilitating lawful trade and travel, modernizing aids to navigation and marine information systems, and transforming our own internal workforce capacity as well as our partnerships. While I don't have the time to go into each of these in great detail, I'd like to highlight the tenet that is behind all of them. And in fact, we've highlighted that tenet already today, and that is that without shared governance, we cannot collectively meet the challenges ahead. And at the end of the day, the Coast Guard is America's maritime governance force. Governance is about influencing behavior of all stakeholders in a manner that maximizes benefits, because when you aggregate the many diverse authorities, our operational capacities, and most importantly, our people, the Coast Guard has a lot of organic capability to influence behavior. But we also know that governance is more than the government, and certainly more than the Coast Guard, because the Coast Guard and this effort is only part of the shared governance that's needed to ensure resiliency today and prepare for readiness tomorrow. Shared governance brings to bear so much more than any of us can bring alone, to influence behavior in a way that benefits the entire system. Governance shared by all stakeholders means that we can use all of the tools, all of the industry standards, regulations, and even international conventions as regimes to set up rules. We can build awareness, we can influence operations, and we can maximize the system-wide efficiency, safety, security, and stewardship, while also building resilience. This MCSO provides that framework, and I look forward to your questions and those of my panel and with the panel members here as we talk more about the marine transportation system. Thank you. I don't know if you want to leave that.
All right, excellent job. Okay, for my audience, I think we get a gold star. You have just participated in 2.5 hours of presentations in 35 minutes. So, in other words, a lot of information we weren't able to cover today, but we felt that each of our panelists had really good information we wanted to share. We obviously hit the highlights. At this point, we'd like to go ahead and open it up to a Q&A session. If you wouldn't mind, if you have a question, raise your hand. Evan has a microphone, and we've got a gentleman in the back, and we'll pass the microphone back.
First off, thank you for all those great presentations. And I was curious, you hit on challenges, and I was kind of opening up to each of the panel members. What challenge, from your perspective, what challenges do you see, but also what can the everyday person do to impact those to a positive result?
Guess I got nominated to take this one. I mean, challenge is the age of our infrastructure right now. From what WCI sees is there needs to be a meaningful infrastructure passed this Congress with before 2020 with meaningful money behind it, not just for waterways, but for all infrastructure. I mean, look at roads, bridges, freight. It's all connected one way or another. As far as the everyday person, what you can do, grassroots is extremely important. I'm just dress shoes on the hill that lobbies your elected officials. You guys actually vote. So every day you can talk to your elected officials if you bring up waterway infrastructure and the importance that it is, because we're often overlooked from a perspective out of sight, out of mind. Not many times you get held up by a barge. But you get held up by, you know, trucks and traffic or railroad crossings.
Thanks for the question. So the Coast Guard in uniform in the Midwest is often asked why we're here. And so I guess I would offer similarly that education, discussing the value of the inland and the marine transportation system, and trying to grow and expand awareness of the importance of the system would really be something that I would highlight that can be handled at the grassroots level and at that kind of person, individual person level. Thanks.
Any other questions? Right up in front.
Thank you. I'm Jim Moore. When I look at the amount of work that we've got scheduled on the barge, on the inland waterway infrastructure, it's a drop in the bucket, isn't it? And how do we possibly go about getting the funding that's going to adequately meet these requirements that we have?
Yeah, I mean, the latest number for an infrastructure package is $2 trillion, so the $8 billion needed is a rounding error at the end of the day that they probably wouldn't even miss. To echo my earlier comment, to get the funding, it's your day-to-day grassroots. It's being heard. It's, you know, it doesn't matter if it's local, official, or federal. Get out there and talk to them. And also, you know, every elected official has a town hall once a month, a teletown hall, where you could call in, and if you just call in, just say, hey, please fund the inland waterways at efficient funding levels is a big deal and can go a long ways. We put in, as far as WCI, we believe conforming the cost share is the way of the future for the inland waterways and the best way to modernize it. And if you want to reach out to your federal officials and say an infrastructure conform the cost share, we'd be greatly appreciative.
Any other questions?
Did I hear you right that you had $8 billion for infrastructure, which you think would put the system in great shape?
That's authorized projects. So that's, you know, you got NEST, your seven locks and dams, five on the Upper Miss, two on the Illinois Waterway. It would bring it up into good shape, and it would lower the 60-year average life of a lock significantly. You know, these locks were mostly built in the 1930s and 40s.
I got it. Yeah. So $8 billion, if you take 50 years, amortized value, if you took the 500-and-some million tons shipped, it's about $1 a ton. Why doesn't the industry just raise the funds itself? What's the problem? Just sell the locks to the private industry, and they'll invest the funds to have good locks, and you're on the road, like you have good railroads and good cars.
Yeah, so public-private partnerships has been a topic that's been hot since about 2013. Inland Waterways believe that we already are in a public-private partnership with our Inland Waterway Trust Fund. We paid 29 cents for a gallon of gas that we raised on ourselves in 2014. We actually are the highest federally taxed mode of transportation right now. And it's been a partnership from the beginning with the federal government, because there's several different beneficiaries on the waterways. You know, we have a national defense mechanism, you have a water supply aspect, you have industrial water intake, so raising it all on just one mode or one beneficiary, we don't believe is the efficient way to fund these projects.
We've got time for one more question. Actually, we're going to take two questions. So we're going to start with the gentleman in the back row. So hold on for a second for the microphone.
And you were talking about the beneficial users of the inland waterways. We left out one big group, and that's the recreational boaters. They benefit from them tremendously.
Good point. And then last question.
Thanks, Mary. Mine's not more of a question. It's just some information for everybody. For those that are interested in the Marine Highway Program, grant program, the notice of funding for the 2019 is due out fairly shortly. So I'd encourage you to contact your Gateway office and find out a bit more about that. This year it's probably going to be somewhere between $7 and $7.5 million. And if you've been watching the press lately, we just awarded last year's to three private entities, all related to boat building. So I would encourage you all to participate. Those three grant awards were up in New York, Virginia, and Louisiana. It would be great to see some for the Midwest. So I put the challenge out there for Marine Highway Programs. And the second part is the project designation for 2019 closes July 31st. So reach out to your Gateway office and see where we can help you.
Okay, very good.
And I just wanted to add on to that. I had two props that I forgot to bring today. It was two Waterways journals from the past few weeks, both featuring MARAD grants and opportunities. So keep an eye out for MARAD news in the Waterways Journal to keep abreast of what's happening. Thanks.
All righty. I got quick thank yous. I want to thank Chad with MARAD for all the work that you do and your staff as far as providing those grant opportunities for both equipment and infrastructure. Thank Tracy for all the work that you and your organization do at a national level for infrastructure investment. Thank Ben and Dennis Wilsmeyer for all the work that you've done. I think if you notice when Ben showed that slide, it was a former military base. Look at the terminals that he has on that facility. Again, partnering with the private sector for a shipper's perspective, you've offered more opportunities for work and for job creation, so you guys have done a fantastic job with that. The other part that Ben did not mention is a lot of his tenants are supporting the other modes of transportation. So providing those good intermodal connectivity and great transportation rates. And then for Captain Stormer, we had a pre-conference call about this. We specifically talked about who is our target market for today's audience. It's shippers, it's carriers, it's terminals. And we want to thank Captain Stormer for taking time of his schedule to be here, boots on the ground, listening firsthand from the industry as far as what they need. And it helps him, I think, immensely as far as the services he provides to all of us for safety and protecting the commerce that's moving up and down the river. So let's give them a round of applause.